going down at full speed. Have you ever had that happen to you? Down a road or something? Of course. Going downhill at full speed, not in New Orleans. So don't lie to me. You got to drive somewhere else for that to happen, right? No hill country around here. But we're not talking about a road paved with tar or cement. Driving a car, we're talking about a life journey and how we can succumb and be headed for a low, down, and dirty pit at the bottom and at full speed. If you've been reading with us in Judges, if you've been reading the book of Judges, maybe you have noticed that we may want to talk about a guy that going downhill pretty quick was pretty much his life, Samson. You see, he is listed in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, if I'm not mistaken. I want to look at that for a second because I want to, let's see. Hebrews 11, yeah. Verse 32 says, and what more shall I say? This is the Hall of Fame of the faith heroes written in the book of Hebrews. And it lists all the way from the first one, Adam or whatever, all the way through. And it starts listing Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and David and so many. Mentions Gideon, which we saw last week. But in verse 32, it says, and what more shall I say, for time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, and David, and Samuel, and all the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Now, if we're going to take all of those things that are describing these great heroes of faith, then Samson would probably fall under one category there. From weakness was made strong. But mighty at war, you could say he probably was when he killed 1,000 men with the jaw of a donkey. But then when you look at his motives and you look at his personal life, he wasn't such a great warrior of armies, because he never led an army. Did you notice that? Every single one of the judges that God chose led the people of Israel to freedom, to deliverance. Samson was the one that we talk about the most, and he didn't. He worked on his personal life. He cared about himself, and everything he did was about Samson. Therefore, you can see how even though God was working in the midst of Samson, things just didn't go as they should have, could have, would have, right? The people being delivered from the Philistines. At the end of this sermon, of course, I mentioned it, but let me just say it right now. Samson started the work of defeating the Philistines, but if you recall, it was years and years later that Samuel and David were able to finally defeat the Philistines, who have been a thorn in the side of the people of Israel. There's only a few stories in the Bible, actually. I know there's quite an amount there that you may think of, but not like as tragic as Samson's story. Here we have a man that God gave him 20 years to get it right. 20 years to start defeating the enemy, and then at the enemy defeated him. The story of Samson is an illustration of what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9:27. If you have that for me. 1 Corinthians 9:27. If not, we'll look at right here. It says, but I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. He was disqualified pretty much throughout his life. Hebrews chapter 11, 32 mentions him as a hero, but really, when you think about it, he did a lot of things that actually led to sin in his own personal life. and in the life of others and the people he loved. And we're going to talk about that. And we're going to be in Judges chapter 13 all the way through 16. I'm going to be skipping through the text as I did last week, hopefully. We'll get it done. But in chapter 13, starting, it says, "Now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. There was a certain man of Zorah of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had borne no children. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to a woman and said to her, 'Behold, now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore, be careful not to drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head.'" Don't you hate boys with long hair? I know some mamas do, right? Like, cut the hair, boy. Like, that's why I cut it, because I know you don't like me with dreads and stuff like that. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. "Now, therefore, be careful. No razor shall come upon his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Notice that it says he will begin. God never said he will deliver. He will begin. It'll be just a little taste for him. He started something he never could finish. God was very clear from the beginning to his parents. And he said he's going to be a Nazarite. Now, let's talk a little bit about Samson's life and a few things here that happened. Number one, he disparaged his heritage. He just simply rejected it, counted as of no value his own heritage. What mom and dad had taught him, what mom and dad had implanted in him from the womb. Okay? I mean, they knew that Samson was chosen by God, and he was chosen for a great purpose after 40 years of slavery to the Philistines. I mean, his parents knew it. The writer knew it, whoever he was, right? We, the readers, know it, but it seems like Samson didn't know it, that he had that big purpose, right? He was born in a God-fearing home. Samson was born in a God-fearing home. If you look at the story here, God appears to the wife. It doesn't mention her name, just says the wife, right? But it mentioned his name, Manoah. And the name Manoah means resting place. But he was a little restless. Because when the angel of the Lord, once again, who is God, it's an anthropomorphism. When God takes shape of a human and shows up to people. And that is Jesus Christ himself. So Jesus shows up and shows up to the wife and says, "Yay, I know you're barren, but you're going to have a child." And gives her specific instructions. She goes running to Manoah, "Hey, I saw this man." First she says, "I saw this man. His appearance was kind of weird, but there was this man that told me this and that and that and that and that." And Manoah's like, "What? I want to see this man. I want to hear this man. I want to know what he had to say." He was a little restless, even though his name was Resting Place. Apparently he didn't trust his wife or something. But anyway, you know, this is a journey. We're all on a journey, amen? So all of a sudden, the angel of the Lord shows up again to whom? To the wife again. He doesn't even show up to Manoah. She is the one that saw him and said, "Hold on one second, I'll be right back." And she goes running and gets her husband, Manoah, says, come. I want you to hear it, right? So then they finally get it, okay, so this is what's going to happen. And they want to bring him some food. Again, you see that? You see some people bringing some food at some altars around our town in some places at some seasons, right? Well, this is a common practice of worship from old times. So they decided, "Let me bring you a little lamb, and let me bring you some meat, some tortillas, let's get it going." And the angel of the Lord this time was clear. He didn't say, "Just bring it, you know, I'll wait." No, he said, no. "Just go ahead and place it at the altar as a sacrifice." And after they'd done the sacrifice, fire came out, right? That fire came out, burnt it, and the angel of the Lord took off. And he left. And they were like, whoa. They were asking him, what's your name? And he said, just why you ask me my name when my name is Marvelous? Reminds me of Billy Crystal. You remember him? You look marvelous, he used to say. Some of you remember. Some of you are that old. I was a little kid when that happened, yeah. But marvelous. Now, wonderful, marvelous, who could be that except God, amen? And the same word marvelous that he says here is the same word that is used to describe all the works of God throughout the Pentateuch, or the first books, or the first five books of the Bible. So this is very interesting, right? But check this out. His parents, he was born in a God-fearing home. He was born in a God-fearing home. They believed in prayer and worship. They prayed to God. God answered. They did sacrifice. They worshiped. So they believed in prayer. This is a special gift from God that he has given the nation of Israel to bring this child to a barren woman. And they prayerfully asked God for his blessing, and they worshiped him. They brought the offerings. He was set apart by God from the womb, it says. From the womb. You see, God has a purpose for you. And he's had it since the womb. Did you know that? Some of us just don't realize that. They brought offerings, and they didn't care. Now, here God then sets Samson apart. He made him a Nazarite. The word Nazarite means separated, okay? And that means that he was completely submitted to God and for his purpose only. It's like you can't have a job on the side. You can't do anything else but serve me because I have set you aside. And we'll see some of the signs. What were some of the signs? First of all, you couldn't have any liquor, anything that had liquor in it. No type of alcoholic beverage. Wow. You see, it's weird because the Bible doesn't prohibit drinking. But every time God calls somebody for a special purpose in the Old Testament, not all the time, but sometimes when he calls a person to say, you're going to be for me and for me alone, and you're going to work for me and for me alone, he says, you will not drink. You will not cut your hair. That's why I'm talking about it. I should let it just grow. When I was in college, my hair was down to here. You don't want to see that. Oh, my curls coming down, yeah. Anyway, and what else? He wasn't to touch anything, a carcass. He wasn't to be in contact with anything that was dead. So those are it, right? He couldn't touch anything dead. He couldn't drink any alcohol. And the sign was the long hair never to be cut in his life. Now, they tried to raise Samson in the fear of God, of course, because I'm pretty sure that everything was well until he grew and he became a teenager and he got that little spunk about him and that little chip on his shoulder that I know what I'm doing. You don't need to tell me. Why are you always bugging? I got this. Chill out. Girl, that's what they say to mom. Or their dad says something, boy. Yeah. And I know that the parents took care of him because if you look at verse 24, right there at the end of the chapter, it says, and she gave birth, the woman gave birth to the son and named him Samson. And the child grew up and the Lord, what? Blessed him. And the spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahanandan between Sarai and Esthol, which means the camp of Dan. That's what it means, all that. Okay? Simple. So here we go. All of this marvelous heritage that Samson had been given. Now he's an adult, and he, instead of placing himself in the hands of God so that he could do what God had called him to do, he decided to live a life of pleasure and give himself whatever he wanted. It is tragic because God has chosen some of you young people for great things, but yet you haven't realized it yet, that there's a great opportunity and potential in your life. So don't take that lightly. Some of us have to grow really old to understand God's purpose, unfortunately. So you youths out there, if you're listening to me, please listen. Do not deem unworthy. Do not disparage the heritage that God has placed you, and your parents that are praying for you, your parents that are trying to guide you in the ways of the Lord, whatever they're doing, do not despise what we've been giving you here at church also, because you'll end up in your enemy's hands. You'll end up a captive. You'll end up in chains. And look at Samson. He ended up captive in chains. They plucked out his eyes, and they just smashed his life. Period. And he couldn't finish the work. So I want you to analyze. I want you to listen and obey and just comply with God, honoring and respecting your parents that have dedicated you to God, and everything shall be okay. But this is not just for our young people. Same thing for us, right? For all of us. I remember a mother came into my office one day, and she was worried about the future of her son. She says, "I don't know what to do with this kid anymore. I'm just done. I'm just done. There's nothing else I can do for him. He just won't listen." And I'm thinking, wow, he's only 15, 14. And this kid's already, you're done with him? I've tried everything, Pastor. But then as we started talking and talking and talking, she said something that was so wise and smart. I was like, girl, I need to write that down and use it in a sermon. That was about a year ago. And I have a little post-it note on my screen to use it. And today I'm going to use it. She said to me after praying and discussing the problem, she said, "You know what? So many of us are always warning our children and throwing at them how messed up it's going to be when they grow up. How messed up their lives are going to be because of their behavior. When we shall, instead of just proclaiming that dark future for them and throwing it in their faces when we get angry, we ought to be telling them how much we pray for a great and bright future for their lives. We ought to be saying that more than just going at them saying, you're gonna mess up, watch yourself. Oh, yeah." So, kids, be careful. Now, number two, he challenged his parents. He challenged his parents. In chapter 14, it says that Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. What was he doing among the Philistines? Goodness gracious. So he came back and told his father and mother, "I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me as a wife. I want her, I want her, I want her, I want her, I want her." Remember that at those times, the parents were the ones who fixed you up. They're the ones who arranged your marriage. How would you like that, honey? Oh, she's like, "Oh, yeah, I'll trust my mama." Wow, right? Yeah. That's something else. Would you trust your mom and dad to do that for you? Well, some of you are like, "I already did." Right? Samson descended geographically and spiritually. Let me tell you, he was on a descent. He was on a collision course with the bottomless pit. He decided to go down. And if you look, it says in the first verse, "Then Samson went down." Four times in this chapter it says he went down, he went down, he went down. My goodness, he was going down. I know that maybe the writer wasn't implying that it was spiritually, it was just physically, geographically, but you can see the picture, how spiritually he was going down for real. Evidence of his decline, you know. You see, you got to understand that Samson got mixed up with the wrong crowd. He fell in love with a pagan woman. He fell in love with a Philistine. He saw her. He wanted her. And he said, "I want her, mom and dad. Go get her, go get her, go get her." And he knew the laws. He knew that he had to be separated. He knew that he wasn't supposed to mix with those people. But guess what? If you keep reading a little bit later, I brought my other Bible in Spanish because I have everything marked there, and it's so difficult for me because this Bible stays here in the church, so I don't have it with me to look at stuff, right? But look at verse 4. It says in chapter 14, "However, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. So at that time, the Philistines were ruling over Israel." Now, please be careful with that verse. Don't be thinking, "Oh, so God made him sin so that God could accomplish his purpose." No, God knew from the get-go that Samson was going to sin. So he said, since he's going to sin, I'm going to use it to accomplish some purpose. God does not waste even your mess ups. He turns them into miracles. He'll turn your mess into a miracle. That God does that. So you can notice that there. You see, he decided to ignore God. He decided to ignore the laws of the land, that they weren't supposed to mix with them. And he told his parents. He didn't ask him, can I have her, please? He just said, I want her, and you need to get her for me, period. He didn't care if the desires were contrary to his parents' beliefs or his parents' desires. So God then exercises mercy and says, even in your mess up, I'm going to make a miracle. As a matter of fact, you're not even going to marry this woman because I'm going to annul this marriage. I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen, even in the midst of your sin. So you need to listen and consider when you make decisions, when you decide to mix yourself with the wrong crowd. This could be friends. This could be people in general. This could be just people at work. You could be an adult and get mixed up with the wrong crowd. You see, big and small people will fall into the hands of the enemy, men and women alike. So many Christians in life, knowing the pain and the difficult that an incompatible spiritual relationship brings when two people have different convictions, and when they differ and still they say, I fell in love, mama. I can't fight against my heart. I can't get her out of there, mama. Dad, I love this man. You don't understand. You guys don't understand. I fail in love. That's our problem. We fall. Boom. I'm not guilty. I mean, what can I do if I just fell in love? I can't tell my heart what to do. Yes, you can. As a matter of fact, be careful. Once again, I repeat myself so many times. People out there say, follow your heart. Don't follow your heart, the Bible says. It's the most deceitful thing that you have inside. Your heart and then your tongue. Oh, my God. So be careful what you say because it comes from the heart, period. They're both connected. It's like your tongue goes all the way down here. He just crawled into my skin, in my heart. I don't know. What can I do? I can't get him out of there, right? And that's how it started in the life of Samson. He started getting, you know, he was a rotten kid. He wanted to get spoiled. So guess what? I want to show you a video of what happens when Samson was a kid. Maybe he started at some early age kind of wanting to be spoiled. He was a little rotten. Believe it or not, there was video at the time. And we got a video of Samson when he was taken to a toy store. Watch him.
Sorry, I accept your challenge, though, okay?
I'll watch the kid in the back.
Next time. I'll bring my car to school.
That's the mama.
If I could beat you.
That's the kid.
You're going to beat a retired guy.
The worst deck is Joey's. No, Pegasus deck sucks.
Yeah.
Pegasus.
No, Pegasus can actually do something, because if you just cost 500 life points, a toon can attack you directly.
Do you understand?
So, like, automatic minus 3,000.
You got Magic Cylinder with Yu-Gi-Oh!
Look at him.
Yu-Gi, you're dying.
Wabuko. Wabuko.
I know Yu-Gi got the best deck, though.
I know that the video is not supposed to be focused on them, but
Kuribo saves your ass. Put it from here.
Swords
of Revealing Light.
Mama's mad.
I can counter everything.
Yep.
It's the biggest
there goes little Samson's.
No, just find a way. No, just find a way to counter those.
The only thing you don't get is Exodia, which is sure.
Why is that even in the deck?
I got two God cards in my deck.
Please.
I got you. Sorry, stand in the way at least. Like, pretend. Sorry, you're such a silly man.
I think that was Samson right there. And all for a pack of Pokemon cards. Amazing, right? Now let's keep going. Not only he defied his parents, but he also defiled his body. And when he went down, right? And as he's going down with his parents, they're going to go get this girl that he wants. And apparently, you know, they were traveling. You know, they traveled in packs. And when they were traveling far away, bunches of people together. And maybe he wasn't next to his parents because they didn't know that he encountered a lion. And God was giving him so much strength that he tore it into pieces, right? But they kept going. But guess what? Months later, when they came back to do the wedding, he went by and saw the carcass of the lion. And when he saw it, he saw a honeycomb in there. He's like, in the carcass. Ugh. And he goes, yeah. Sweet. And then he goes to mom and dad and says, want some honey? Of course, my son, thank you. He defiled his body and then took it and he passed the honey. Don't pass the honey. You see, when Samson did this, he messed up his family. Oh, my God. He had been told the laws of the Nazarites in Numbers chapter 6, never to touch a carcass of any kind, no contact with the dead. He didn't care. He knew it was a sin. He knew it was a sin, but he still did it. How many Christians today get contaminated, they get defiled, and they enjoy it for a little while like honey? Unfortunately, they got it from a carcass. And we do that in our lives. And then we pass it on to other people because every time you sin, it affects other people. Every time the honey's passed. It's sad to say it, but he messed up his parents, man. And all while playing and entertaining his friends. As a Nazarite, he wasn't supposed to participate in a wedding with a Philistine.